Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we talk to writers and try to get to know them a little bit better through a series of five questions with some bonus questions thrown in and a little rapid fire quiz at the end. And today I'm happy to welcome a writer that I've gotten to know really well over the last, four or five years or so, and several books, Liz Milliron. Hi, Liz.
Hello.
Thanks for coming.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. We're talking about as if we're like in the same room. We're on a podcast. We're recording because we can't be together, but thanks for coming to my show.
The new reality of life.
Yes. And here we are. So, but we're adapting, we're overcoming, we're getting it together. So we're keeping it together. At least that's what we tell ourselves, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to do a brief bio for the people that might not know you, who you are. Liz Milliron, which is a really cool name. It's M-I-L-L-I-R-O-N, which is actually two words put together, Milliron.
Yes.
It should be easy to say. And somehow I struggle with it. I don't know why. But Liz M. is the author of the Laurel Highlands mystery series, set in the scenic Laurel Highlands of Southwest Pennsylvania, and also of the Homefront Mysteries, which is the historical mystery series, which is wonderful, set in Buffalo, New York, during the early years of World War II. Liz is a member of Sisters in Crime, Pen Writers, and International Thriller Writers. A recent empty nester, she lives outside Pittsburgh with her husband and retired racer greyhound. I have to tell you real quick, I used to dog sit for a greyhound when I was in college.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, she was a retired racer. Her name was Gorgeous.
They're all gorgeous. Yeah. I think they're the most beautiful dogs. Well, I mean, they're incredibly goofy sometimes too, but... When they're not being goofy, they're really pretty.
They are. They're just like elegant looking, or there's something different about them. They're very
right up until they're not elegant, you know, laying on their back with their legs in the air. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, even the most beautiful creatures can be goofy. So,
yes.
Okay. So we're going to get started with the five questions. This is just, you know, lots of fun. We like to know everything about you that you want to share. So the first question is, how did your writing career get started?
There's so many people who are like, oh, well, I was born with a crayon in my hand. Not quite that long ago for me. I dabbled in writing when I was in middle school because I was so unpopular that my friend and I, who was a very gifted artist, used to make cartoons. And that's where I kind of started writing. And then I wrote some really, really bad urban fiction. Again, basically so I could escape the fact that my life was hell in middle school. But I don't think I seriously started getting, you know, seriously got started until it was the late 90s. And I thought, well, you know, I always wanted to write. I was an English major. So, you know, the expectation is you're English major, you got to go write a book. I never wanted to write the great American novel. But I thought, you know, I could do a mystery. This is like really easy. I read mysteries. How hard could this be? So I started the book. And then I had a kid, and my daughter was born, and any work on the book came to like a screeching halt because I was busy. You know, you can't write with small children. That's where it all started. And then after I lost my job in 2011, my husband said to me, you know, whatever happened to that book you started way back when you had dreams and aspirations? And I said, it's still kicking around here somewhere, I'm sure. And he's like, well, why don't you take the summer off and finish it? So I did. I collected unemployment for 6 months and took my kids to swim practice and finished the book. Because again, how hard could this be? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a mystery. I read these all the time. I know how to write a mystery. And then I finished it by the end of the summer. I was so proud of myself that I'd finished this book. And that's when I joined Sisters in Crime. I'd read about them in a newspaper and I took myself down to Mystery Lovers Bookshop because they'd mentioned it. And I met Annette Dashefi, who is a very talented writer. And she pretty much disabused me of every single misconception I had about writing and how easy it was to write a mystery. And it turns out it's not easy at all. Right. And she was very proud of me that I had in fact finished a 90,000 word novel, but yeah, it wasn't good. But that's where I got started. I guess everybody's got to start somewhere. And then I started learning what it really took to write a mystery. And, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, that's kind of funny because maybe if you had thought, oh, this is, you know, since you thought it was so easy, you're just like, hey, let's just go do this. Like you didn't have any of those things holding you
back. No, I had no inhibitions. I had no thought that, oh my, you know, like, oh, I got to do a character arc. What's a character arc? And I plot, and is my dialogue enough? And, you know, what's my plotting look like? I just wrote the thing. I didn't even plot it. I was like super confident that I could do this mm-hmm. because I read mysteries. I've been reading mysteries since I was probably 10 years old, mm-hmm. you know, yep. and mm-hmm. I know what a mystery is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So of course I could do it.
Right.
And I did, just not very well.
Not well. That's the whole ignorance is bliss kind of, you know, thing.
Yes. Like,
let's just do this thing. Absolutely. It'll be great. Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't know, you know, how hard can it be? To just do it, it's not very hard at all. Like mm-hmm. if you are just doing it, you know, to write, to see if you could do, if you can do this thing, if you can get to 90,000 words and have a story from start to finish with a beginning, a middle, and an end, mm-hmm. it's not very hard at all. If you actually want someone other than yourself to read it, and maybe your spouse, if your spouse is not as opinionated as my spouse, that's a little harder.
Yeah.
That takes more work.
Exactly.
As it turns out.
Well, I'm glad you went through that process. And
I am too.
Has it gotten easier or harder? That's not one of the questions.
No.
That's still hard.
Well, no, that's not entirely true. In some ways it's gotten easier because since I am writing series, I've gotten the hang of how to build a world, and some of it is familiar to me. And, you know, so some of that has gotten easier, but still coming up with an idea and then taking that plot all the way through to the end, that's still hard. I still look at about the 25%. I'm pretty good with starting. Well, no, actually, when I first start, the first 50 pages are murder, literally, because I'm like, I don't know how to get started. And then I get, then it starts to click and it's like, okay, I can do this. And then we get to about the 30% mark and I start falling victim to the same, I used to think it was just me, but it turns out it's almost everybody I know who's a writer, which is this is crap. What the heck was I thinking when I started this mm-hmm. phase, you know, and it was, you know, when you hear people like Hank Phillippe Ryan and Hallie Efren and, you know, Reese Bowen and all these writers who have been phenomenally successful and, you know, won Agatha's and Mary Higgins Clark Award and all this other stuff. And they think, oh no, every book is like this. I'm like, okay, not just me. I'm not supposed to get over this.
Right. Well, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. So you know,
exactly.
You have that
exactly.
to look forward to. So there.
Exactly. I read something that like some ridiculously high percentage of people want to write a book, mm-hmm. but then only about 10% of them actually ever do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, everyone I run into could write a book if they had more time. Usually that's what they say. So when did you first realize that words have power, that something you wrote had an impact on someone or a situation? That's question number two.
So I think I always understood that words have power. Like that concept is not new to me. And I think, you know, because I was an English major in college and I read extensively and I knew a lot of history. So I knew that people's words could inspire other people to do things. I mean, you look at the Federalist Papers and you look at Thomas Paine's, you know, pamphlets and that, I mean, words inspired the revolution of the, you know, the American Revolution. So that concept is not, I mean, I realized that really early, I think, that the written word or the spoken word could really influence somebody. But oddly enough, my brother, the older of my two brothers, who's not a reader, he's not a reader. We were talking one day and he's now in his early 40s. I think he was like in his late 30s. This was a few years ago. And he quoted something. And I was like, it was like, he gave me a quote. We were talking and he quoted something. And I said, oh, that's really interesting. Where'd you read, you know, where did you read that? And he's like, Mary Beth, you wrote it.
Oh, wow.
You know, Liz, you wrote it. That's you. And I'm like, no. And it was an essay that I had written. I don't know, even know when, if I was in college or late high school, but that he had read and he had saved because that particular passage had struck him so strongly.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, things that I write can be that way. You know, I never really thought, I'm certainly not JFK or Thomas Paine or, you know, John Jay, any of the Federalist writers. But that was the first moment that it was like, oh, wow, you know, I could do this too. Like, it was just such a surreal experience when he's like, no, you wrote this. Right. Don't you remember? And I'm like, no.
Right. So he quoted you back to you yourself and you were like, that's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's really profound. Where did you read that?
Right. Somebody Liz, really you, smart. Yeah. Somebody really smart. Was this. Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I didn't.
Oh,
like,
I love that.
You did.
That's amazing. What a cool story. I love that. So you've been like, and now you have to believe everything I say and that I'm a genius because you quoted me back to me. So never forget that.
Well, my brother's incredibly stubborn. I don't think he would ever go for that.
Well, that makes it even more important that he did that. So, you know,
yes, I was really shocked because my brother and I have not agreed on much in our adult lives. And to have him tell me that something I wrote years ago still resonated, you know, had such an impact and still resonated with him was very meaningful and really quite touching.
It is very, I don't even know him and I'm touched by that. Oh. Very good. Okay. Next question. Which comes first for you, the plot or the characters?
Always the characters. Because when I read, that's the most important thing for me. And I think that's not an uncommon reaction. In my experience, I will forgive kind of a weaker plot if you've got really good characters that I'm really invested in and I want to follow. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily even have to like them. You know, there's that whole likability thing. But for me, story is character. Mm-hmm. You know, the plot just is the mechanics of what happens. Mm-hmm. And the story is about the people that are doing those actions and being impacted by the actions. And actually, they bring that plot to life. They breathe some sort of air into it because otherwise it's just boring. It's just a series of events. This happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, and boom, the story's over. It's not until you get people involved, real or fictional, that makes it really alive to me. Mm-hmm. So I always start with stories. And when I started the Laurel Highlands Mysteries, I had just this image of a Pennsylvania state trooper after working in a long, exhausting night shift. And he thinks he's going to get to go home and feed his dog and go to sleep. And instead, he gets a dead body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what do you do with it? And then for the Homefront Mysteries, it was actually, it was started with a short story. Actually, it was started with the Malice Domestic Anthology, mm-hmm. Murder Most Historical. But again, it started with a character. You know, what happens if a young girl who is a movie buff and who works at Bell Airplane shows up to work one morning and her supervisor is dead?
Yeah.
What does she do? She likes to watch Sam Spade movies. She figures this is really cool. What does she do? Mm-hmm. And who are her friends and how do they help her? And then they usually wind up telling me what happens next.
Well, your characters definitely are, because I read a lot of books and manuscripts, mm-hmm. and stories. I mean, I think it's in the thousands of every year, but your characters always stand out to me because they're not, like, you're not worried if they're opinionated or if they rub people the wrong way, you know, but they're likable, but not like, they're not perfect. And I think that's what sets your characters apart from a lot of characters, because they're just, they seem like human beings walking around, which is what you're looking for.
Thank you. And that's what I try to make them. Mm-hmm. There are times when someone will read and they'll be like, oh, well, but that's not the perfect response to this. And I'm like, well, but they're not a perfect person. You know, I don't make the right choice. You know, that's not the right choice in this situation. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. I mean, I went through this with Broken Trust, where, and I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give it away, but, you know, there are characters behaving badly and people and a couple of readers were like, well, isn't this sort of childish? And I'm like, yes, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But you know what? This is what people do.
Yeah, we're
even
flawed.
Adults. They behave childishly sometimes. Yeah. And as long as they get over it and, you know, learn from it, I'm okay with that. Now, I don't want to leave them in that situation. Those are characters I'm not interested in, but I am interested in people who can recognize the fact that, no, I kind of blew it back then, and I'd like to try to make it better.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do a good job with that. They're definitely, they're flawed, and they're well-developed, and they're fleshed out, and that's,
thank you.
That's what people keep coming back. I think people come back for characters more than the story, that, you know, that's what they remember.
Yeah.
So, okay. How did you arrive at the premise of your series? Do you have to choose, or you could talk about both, which one you want to talk about?
Well, I'll talk about the Homefront Mysteries, because that's the next book that's coming out. Like I said, that was a short story. And it was pretty much what I said, you know, what happens when a young girl who's a movie buff, who likes detective movies like Sam Spade, what happens when she shows up at work and her supervisor has clearly been murdered? But there's more to it than that. That was the year that my Sisters in Crime chapter had issued what they called the short story challenge. And we were supposed to write as many short stories as possible and get them submitted to these anthologies. And when they announced Malice Domestic and they said Murder Most Historical, I thought, I don't write historical. I don't have anything to do. I'll never come up with an idea for that. But then I started thinking, and my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, actually did work for Bell Airplane in World War II. Like, this was actually her. So I started thinking about her and what would she do? Like, what, you know, could I do a story around that? Could I build that out? And that's when I started thinking about, you know, what traits did my grandmother have? What would that, you know, Betty Ahern in the series is not my grandmother, but she is inspired by my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote the short story, and that was supposed to be it. It was just a short story. Mm-hmm. And people kept saying, oh, well, you should write a novel. And I'm like, no, I'm done with that character. I'm done with that character. I have no more stories to tell for Betty. And Betty had other ideas. So she said, I was actually looking for something different to write. And she said, and I heard her voice in my head saying, you know, I have more stories. And I started thinking about her. And could she live beyond that short story? What would happen after that? Now, she's had a little bit of, you know, she gets a little taste of it in the short story. And then what? Then what happens? And that's kind of where the premise for that series came out of, which is, you know, and it's allowed me to explore World War II from a different perspective. You know, not just the battlefield. I mean, I've read a lot about the soldiers and the battles and the politics. This is a little different perspective. It's more on, you know, what happened back home with all the people who were left behind. What were they doing?
Yeah.
So it's worked out well.
Yeah.
At least for me, it's worked out well.
She's ornery. So I'm not surprised she didn't just go away, because Betty is pretty ornery.
She is a little ornery.
In a sweet way, not in a bad way.
Yeah. She's very stubborn. She's an Irish. My grandmother was very stubborn. Now, she was not Irish. My grandmother, I think, was older when she worked at Bell, and she was not Irish American, and she didn't live in the First Ward. You know, there's the divergence there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Betty is the oldest daughter. Her older brother is off in the Pacific. She's got three little, you know, younger siblings, and her fiance is off in North Africa. And I want to do something. Why should I just sit at home and sew? Why can't I go do something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she is a little bit, she's a little feisty. Reese Bowen.
Yeah.
She's feisty. Just referred to as feisty. Yeah. I like that word.
Yeah. And that was much of the, you know, the idea back then. They wanted to contribute what they could, and
yes,
you know, that's what they're all doing with the women at home and the other people at home. Yeah. So very cool. Well, we love the books, of course. They're a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Okay, so your fifth and final. We always try to do like a kind of an off the wall question. So, what did you want to be with when you grew up? But you already said you weren't thinking you'd be a writer. So, what did you want to be when you grew up?
No, again, this is where stereotypically the writer thing. I always knew I wanted to be a writer, and not me. I wanted to be a lawyer. Mm. Mm-hmm. I was going to be a lawyer. I was going to be an incredibly successful lawyer. Mm-hmm. I was going to be the youngest female lawyer to make an argument in front of the Supreme Court of the United States.
Wow. Lofty.
Lofty, indeed. And I would love to tell you that all of this was motivated by my deep-seated desire for justice. Mm-hmm. It was motivated by the fact that I wanted to go back to my 10-year high school reunion, rich, powerful, successful, and give a big middle finger to everybody who thought I was a nothing in high school and would never be anything.
Oh, wow.
That's it. It was purely revenge. I was going to be rich and successful just so I could show up my high school classmates. Obviously hilarious. That did not, yeah, it makes me a little bit cringy now because, you know, people like, oh, I wanted to get into law. And you think, oh, because you had a, you know, you got morals and beliefs. Right. And, you know, no, I wanted to be rich.
Pure revenge. Well,
it was complete revenge.
You're a multi-published author. So some of them are going to be very impressed.
Yes. Now I can go back. I actually haven't been back to a reunion since my 10th high school. Mm. I went back to 10 years and looked at them all and thought, wow, you people did not age well. You know, a lot of you who were the it kids, mm-hmm. it's not looking good, guys. Yeah. And I realized that I was probably already more successful than most of them. And I didn't really need to, you know, rub their faces in it. Yeah. So well, I haven't been back, but it's a little cringy and maybe a little shame. But then, when I was in college, I shadowed an attorney for a day. Like it was a friend of my father's that over the summer I got to follow him around. And we spent the entire day in his office doing paperwork and like doing research and filing. And I'm like, where's the exciting part? Like, when do we go to court? And he looked at me and he's like, almost never. I'm like, oh crap. Well, I'm not doing this for the rest of my life.
Where's our Law and Order episode where we're like marching up the steps?
Marching up the steps. And, no, yeah, it doesn't work that way. And I thought, okay, well, fine. I'm not going to do this for the rest of my life. This is boring.
Yeah, it looks like paperwork. No,
I
that's
know. Good.
That's pretty funny. Well, that was the first time I've heard law school for revenge purposes. I like that. I like
Law school for revenge. That's me.
Some people get like a revenge body after divorce, but you wanted a revenge advanced degree.
Oh, no. I wanted revenge at 18 when I walked out of the high school auditorium and thought, you people are all going to pay.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes, speaking of those kinds of people that we all ran into in school, I think negativity and meanness sort of eats at you from the inside out. And I think those people end up being really unhappy and not very good looking. And I think if you have a lot of positive energy and light, then, you know, it just kind of radiates out of you and everyone wants to be around you. So, you know, you have.
Well, that was the thing. At 10 years, I went back. I was married. See, I would have had one kid. My son was not born at that time, but my daughter had been born. She was like a year and a half old. And I was successful enough at my career. I wasn't writing yet, but I was successful enough. And I looked at all the people who were so cool and on like their second or third spouse, and maybe they'd been in the tanning booth for a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I turned out, you know what? It turns out that I probably did okay.
Yeah, you didn't peak early. You know, nobody wants to peak, early.
I did not peak at 18.
Right. Take it from me. Peak way late. And then you can just ride out the rest of it. It's fine. Yeah. You know, I didn't peak till, you know, in my 30s somewhere.
I didn't peak at 18 and then have it all in a downward spiral.
Yeah. Living the good old days. Okay. So we do a rapid fire quiz at the end. Five.
Oh gosh. Fun questions. I'm scared.
You should be very afraid. Be very, very afraid because you know how mean I can be.
I know.
Okay. Okay. Number one, beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Okay. Number two, cake or pie?
Cake.
Ah, that's my girl. Number three, morning person or night owl?
Night owl. Mm-hmm. Not as much of a night owl as I used to be, but night owl.
Yeah. It kind of fades, right? After a while.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Late for me is now like 10:30.
Yeah. Me too. And I'm like, I love my bed. Like, why am I trying to not go to my bed? I love it there.
Exactly. I love being here. Why am I fighting it?
Sleep is amazing. It's wonderful. I can watch that TV show tomorrow. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
We know the answer to that one already. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Okay. That's surprising. I thought you'd be a coffee person.
I hate coffee.
Really? That's very controversial.
Never. I got through 4 years of college, including an entire year where I was an assistant editor and then the lead editor of a newspaper, my college newspaper sports section, where I was pulling all-nighters without drinking coffee. I can't stand the taste of it.
You're kidding.
Coffee flavored anything.
Ugh. Really? It's like cilantro for you. It's like the worst.
Yes. Yes, coffee, ice cream, chocolate, anything with coffee, even a hint of it. Nope.
Wow.
Why did you ruin that perfectly good chocolate by putting coffee in it?
Well, now, see, I've learned this about you. I never knew this, and I would have offered you a cup of coffee. So.
No, never had. I have had two halves of a cup of coffee in my entire life.
No.
One I got by accident. I ordered tea and they gave me coffee and I was so desperate for caffeine. I tried my best to drink it. Could not do it. Wound up pouring it down the drain. And the other was way, way back when I didn't really understand coffee and I got a cup and I thought, oh, well, this is cool. You know, I'm in college. I'm supposed to drink coffee.
Sure.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
Didn't make it through more than half the cup. And I had sugar and cream in it too.
That is fascinating.
People have told me I'm just not drinking good enough coffee. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. That is so fascinating. Well, my husband does not like coffee at all. But I think he would like drink. I mean, he doesn't drink tea or anything like that. And he doesn't drink anything. He drinks water. You know, he's just a weirdo, but he doesn't even like the smell of it. So that's the only other person. But I think he would drink it if you forced him to drink it. He wouldn't like be repelled
by it. The smell of coffee, this like the smell of fresh roasted coffee, there is a... Well, there used to be. I haven't been on this trip in a lot of years. Pittsburgh, they had a coffee roaster shop that you could walk in and they roasted their own beans and they fresh ground it, which is how I know it's not just the quality thing. The smell of it is wonderful. Walk into that shop, the smell of roasted coffee, wonderful. But it always just tastes burnt and disgusting.
That is so funny. So that's even more fascinating that you like the smell, but not the taste. Mm-hmm. Huh? Because usually it's part of all the same thing, you know.
Had a perfume once that was actually from the 90s, inspired by the 1930s, that had coffee undertones to it. I loved that perfume.
Huh. Interesting. Now I need to research this as a culinary author and former food cooking professional. I'm just fascinated by all these food stories, and that's why a lot of my questions are food related. So. Well, thank you for sharing that fascinating. I feel like I got to know you so much better. Years. That's so crazy.
Tea? I'm all about the tea. And actually, oddly enough, here's another little thing. I was at Malice Domestic. It was a year I was sitting at Art Taylor's table. Mm-hmm. He asked me to sit there. And his favors were a bunch of tea bags from David's Tea.
Right.
Well, one of them was coffee flavored. And I thought, oh, this one's going to be disgusting. Loved that one.
Now, this is fascinating. Okay. That doesn't make any sense.
Liked that. Right. But a pure cup of coffee? Right.
Can't do it, huh? I do two or three every morning and then I switch to tea. So I like both.
Nope.
But I could send you a coffee scented candle, but I cannot buy you a cup of coffee. So that's
correct.
That's where we are.
Don't send me any freshly ground coffee beans
from
a candle that smells like roast coffee. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
You're down with that. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Now we know this. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here.
No problem.
For all the insight into this fascinating subject that I can't stop thinking about. Tell us what's going on for you next. What do we have to look forward to?
Oh, what's going to me next? Well, immediately next. Is the release of The Stories We Tell, which is Homefront number 2. That is happening on February 9th. We are recording this on February, whatever this is, 3rd. So that is like immediately next. This August will be the release of Laurel Highlands number 4, which is called Harm Not the Earth. Mm-hmm. I'd forget what day in August that's releasing, but it's coming out in August. So that's exciting. And then I am in the middle of writing 3rd Homefront mystery, which is called The Lessons We Learn. And that will be out in February of 2022.
Very
so
good.
Busy, busy, busy.
Always. 2 series is a lot to juggle. So we could talk about that on the next, when your next book comes out, we can have you back and we'll talk about what it's like to juggle a couple of different projects at once. I don't know anything about that.
No, you always just do one thing at a time. You're never multitasking.
I'm super lazy. Okay. So, well, thanks for coming on the show. Loved having you. I always love talking
Absolutely.
To you.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I cannot wait to give you a big hug when I see you again in person. Whenever.
Yes, hugs. In-person visits. It's going to happen someday.
Yeah, people, hugs, trips, conventions, all those things. So.
All those things that we used to love in the before times.
Yeah. Well, take care of yourself. And yes, look forward to the book. Can't wait to see the book. And we'll throw a cover up on it on the video later. And cool. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.